Hey everyone, before we get to the next episode and guest, I want to acknowledge and thank everyone for helping my new book, Game Time Decision Making, a number one new release. Game Time Decision Making, like the playbook, will help you figure out how to make those critical decisions to be more productive and accessible to others. Game Time Decision Making not only deals with the decision making process, but also the assumptions we make to get there. And so to continue your support, I have one ask. Either order the book from Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, or contact me directly, or share one with a friend. Once again, I appreciate all of your support for the playbook and for Game Time Decision Making. Let's join our guest on our next episode. On this episode of the playbook, I have Dave Asprey, CEO of Bulletproof, author of New York Times bestsellers, The Bulletproof Diet and Headstrong, and also the number one health podcast in the world. We talk about awareness and the ego and how those two can complement your life.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and we got the Double Dave episode. One of my good friends, Dave Asprey, CEO, founder of Bulletproof, but more importantly, an ultra entrepreneur. And Dave, I want to start off with something that you taught me. We're both in the Transformational Leadership Council, and you gave a presentation, and I forget what the monkey or the gibbon or whatever that thing's name was that you equated to the ego.
There's a bunch of different kind of animal behaviors, but it's really just three things the ego wants to do, and they're what drives most entrepreneurs, especially when they're getting started, right? There's the I'm giving back level you might get to, and then there's the I gotta like take care of things. Order of operation, three things, and the first one is you've got to run away from, kill, or hide from something that might kill you. And this happens at a single bacteria will do it, and it's distributed throughout your body. The number one, don't die right now. And that will drive your decisions in a boardroom, with investors, with customers. And it happens before you can think about it because it's built into your tissues. The second thing, if that's handled, is eat everything. Because if a famine comes, you could die in like a week, right? So now you're the stereotypical pizza-eating entrepreneur, getting fat and all that sort of stuff, right? And the third thing that all life forms have to do, after nothing killed them and after they didn't starve, well, it's the third F word. So we had fear, feed, and reproduce. And so
now there's like, an F word like that.
Yeah, got a little bit of money, and any extra attention I have now is going into finding a mate or lots of mates quite often, right? That order of operations, those are things that get in the way of things because the fourth F word, which is what weasels and pretty much every other animal out there, whatever we want to talk about, they all have, the fourth F word is friend. And it's form a community, form a biofilm, make yogurt or kombucha if you're a single cell bacteria, make a pack of animals or make a company, make a tribe, make a community. And I've studied all that stuff just in my own evolution as an entrepreneur and all the personal development stuff that I've done. But it really is an animal behavior that is common from single celled up to the largest animals on earth. And we all do it all in that order. And those three things happen before you can think about it. After those strong urges come on to you, then you'll make up a story about why it really makes a lot of sense to do it. The story's a lie.
Wow. And one of the most difficult things is, number one, to be aware of that. And
really
even more difficult is, how do we act when we are aware of it? You know, so many times, even today, I teach the same things that you do about ego. And I'm sure you probably have this feeling. You're like, did I just do that? And like I'm on stage teaching thousands of people like here at Thrive, and within 30 minutes I'm acting in the exact way that I'm teaching people not to.
It's a tough one because by design you're not supposed to see it. This is an automated system to keep meat alive. Wow. And you're made out of meat, right?
Right.
And it believes that if you're in charge, the part of you that you think is you, that you'll probably die. Right? And it's sort of true. If you lean on a hot stove accidentally, well, the automated system will pull your hand away
And then you'll go, good thing I pulled my hand away. Except you didn't do it. You didn't. I smell meat. That really hurts. I guess. Oh, it might be the stove. I think I'll pull it. None of that happened.
Right.
But you told yourself it happened after you made the move. And what's going on in a lot of these things where, oh, yeah, I was acting out of ego, or I was critical about this, or I was just feeling pissed off and I did this. You were feeling pissed off for a biological reason or because your pattern matching system, oh, that looks like something happened to me when I was three. You don't think about that. You feel about that. And then you act in a certain way and then you feel shame later and then you deal with that.
Now, both of us had something in common that we were very wealthy very early and almost at the identical age, I think 25, 26. And then you were smarter than me because when I say that, you lost everything early, right? It took me longer time to lose my money. Okay. But you did go from rags to riches, riches to rags, back to riches.
I welded Toyota truck frames for a while. I worked in an auto parts warehouse for 5 years while I was going through college. I used to scoop ice cream at Baskin Robbins. And I was scrappy, we'll put it that way. When I was 26, I made $6 million. And I lost it when I was 28.
And in those 2 years, what happened or why do you think you lost it?
Well, I mean, I lost it probably because the universe had a lesson to teach me.
That's what I say. That's right.
Is that what you say?
Yeah, that's awesome. But it's true.
It's true. Like, I learned a lot from losing it. And I had this thought in my head at the time. I'm pretty much done. I have as much money as I'll need. So I'm going to go get a degree in, like, psychopharmacology or something. But what I didn't do, because of that F word fear, I didn't look at, oh, what's the potential downside. I didn't manage what I had effectively. And also, there's a certain like level of integrity where, because I had raised in my career to the point where I was in charge of diligence for mergers and acquisitions at a public company, I wasn't allowed to sell my stock because I was blacked out. I could have quit my job and sold everything, which is what any smart person would have done. But here's why I lost the money. And this was the big lesson for me. I looked at a friend over lunch. Everyone at this company was driving BMWs. We all made more money than we should have. And I said, you know, I'll be happy when I have 10 million.
Oh.
When I have 6 million. Okay, it's such an asshole statement, David.
I can't believe
I said that.
Yeah.
Of course you've been there. But it's the I'll be happy with thing. And a lot of entrepreneurs have, I'll be happy when I get my first $100,000 a month. I'll be happy when, you know, I have X employees or when I do this. Bottom line is, none of that brings you happiness. So my great fortune was when I was 23, I was an Entrepreneur magazine, the first person to sell anything over the internet. And fame didn't make me happy, even though it wasn't great fame, but it was, okay, you're 23 and you're like a national magazine with your picture in a size double extra large t-shirt because you weigh 300 pounds. And okay, fame, check. Money, didn't make me happy, check. Like, well, maybe happiness is based on something else. Yeah. And it was that lesson that made me do the personal development work. And what I realized and what I wrote about in Game Changers, which is my last book.
You've written 7 books, by the way, in case you want to reach out there.
Is it 7?
I think so.
5, I think.
5?
Well, there's probably another couple little...
All right, well, at least 5 books. We'll double check.
Yeah, there's 5 and there's a couple other little side book
like
things.
The pamphlets you do with Jack Canfield or something.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. But Game Changers was based on 500 interviews with people who've done big things in the world. Nobel Prize winners, some big entrepreneurs. People have created new fields of medicine. Just like, all right, you made a mark on the world.
Right, modern day think and grow rich.
Yeah, in fact, it's got a lot of that in it.
Yeah,
and I went through and I boiled it down with a statistician to figure out what do they all agree on.
Wow.
And created 46 laws along the lines of 48 laws of power from Robert Greene. And Robert Greene's actually a guy I interviewed in here. By the way, you've read 48 Laws of Power. So that's just one of my top business books. I could not have functioned as a 26-year-old when I got to be in our board meetings at a public company. I was not allowed to speak.
Yeah.
But I was allowed to sit there. I thought they were crazy pants. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I'm a computer scientist. And when I read that book, it opened my eyes. Oh, there's a dance and there's politics and there's all these games going on that were invisible to me. And understanding that at that level has made me a way better entrepreneur, just to understand the things that no one teaches you. Like, you would know this. When you go into a meeting, right, should you show up if you're CEO? And there's actually an equation for that.
Of course.
And the deal is, if their CEO is there and they're bigger than you, you better get your ass there, right? Now, if they're much smaller than you and their CEO is there and it's the first meeting, you probably shouldn't be there, because if you want to negotiate, like,
right, you're in your layer.
Bring in, right? How do you learn that? Like, they don't teach you that in business school. They don't put that in books. But the people who've played the game for a while do it. But 48 Laws of Power helped me understand those dynamics in a major way.
And I believe in a spirit of excellence. In fact, I created the podcast to help people identify the spirit of excellence for this very reason of how do we understand what really matters. For example, most people have the attachment syndrome where we put our emotional attachment to something and then we realize, wait a second, that's backwards. I need to put my emotional attachment into the journey of getting the, I call it the pursuit, right? Yeah. Enjoying the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit, pursuit of our potential or truth. What do you or have you found from Game Changers is, you know, that spirit of excellence? Is there one quality that you see or characteristic that statistically is more present in all of those people?
One of the 46 laws in here is called never discover who you are. And it's counterintuitive, but what the people who change the game do, they don't just say, oh, I'm going to find out what I am. Because what you might discover is that you actually like to just binge watch Netflix and eat pizza, right? I discovered who I am, and I'm big, right? So what if you decided who you were going to be, and you consciously built that? And that's what all of these people have done, right? And some of them, you know, another rule in there is, you know your weaknesses. And focusing on your weaknesses will make you weak. It doesn't make you strong. That was another mistake that I made as a young entrepreneur. Like the stuff that makes you tired, that you hate, pay someone else to do it. Like, oh my God, right? But instead, you're like, I can't have a weakness. I'll go do all that crappy stuff.
I always say find places for weaknesses.
Yeah.
Because you can take a weakness, put it in a different place, and it's a strength. In fact, SAP is the classic example where they needed people for end user software training. You have to be hyper focused and do the same thing again and again, something humans hate, except for if you have autism. Right? Exactly. So they hired 40,000 people with autism that test their software. They took a weakness and made it a super strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you seem to be able to do.
It's totally true. And just understanding that if something sucks your energy, you've got to do it. Another thing that stood out from Game Changers, and it's probably six of the 46 laws, relate to the importance of community. And this is something I didn't quite get when I was getting Bulletproof off the ground. And I'd been at a whole bunch of tech startups and all that. And there's a tech community.
I don't know how we were running into each other.
It's pretty crazy.
Same companies.
Yeah, we must have crossed paths probably like a dozen times. But you know,
you were just heavier. That's probably
right. Yeah, you wouldn't recognize me. There's a tech community where there's a language in Silicon Valley, and you know whether you're an infrastructure guy or a software guy or whatever, but there's clicks and there's meetings and there's a movement, right?
Yeah.
And I was a part of that. But when I started Bulletproof, I had exited tech. I'd been CTO of one of the wristband companies doing human monitoring. And I moved up to Vancouver Island to live on a farm. And the community of entrepreneurs just wasn't really there. And I didn't recognize what was going on there. Like, okay, what's happening? And a dear friend of mine, JJ Virgin, she said, Dave, you need to go to this thing put on by a guy named Joe Polish called the Genius Network. And this is like a $10,000 meeting. And it happens once a year. And it's about 350 entrepreneurs in a room. And they just teach you for 3 days all the stuff that they're doing. And it was so relaxing to go and do that because I'm like, oh my God, here's people who are at a level above me and some who are haven't achieved as much as I have, but they're all, number one, if you can afford $10,000 to go to an event, it's curated, plus Joe's a crazy curator. So I go there and I'm like, oh my God, these are my people. So I can suddenly talk about these things and I can learn at a very accelerated level and things that feel like they're big problems to me. I talked to my buddy Ken Newman there and he's like, I said, well, who do you go to for help? And he goes, well, when I was building my company, these companies were worth hundreds of millions. He goes, I just went to Jack Welch. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But to be able to just chat with guys, like, yeah, he was my mentor for years. We just got to be friends. But I mean, he literally, one time I was having a difficult HR issue, and he hands me his phone. He goes, do you want to call and let the person go on my phone or your phone? You know, but to have someone hold me accountable like that, that's why, for me, going to Genius Network was important. And the reason, in fact, I've gone every year, I think for now six or seven years. it's worth going. Or a mastermind group of some sort of people who are, you know, at your level or bigger. And there's two things you need from your community. One is you need elders, people who are going to teach you the stuff you haven't figured out yet. And you need younger people. Because if you don't have the ability to teach other people, you won't learn. Because if you can't teach it, you didn't really learn it.
Right? And so you need to be in the middle of this dynamic. And if you're lucky enough and you're just getting started, you can get into one of these groups and you're the guy in the room with the least experience. Great. Like, you win.
Right.
But that's unlikely because the curators are supposed to mix the people. But that's the trick. And I'm a member of four or five groups like that. And I go regularly, even though I'm running a sizable company. The Bulletproof Radio has 100 million downloads, Webby Award winning. And I write New York Times books and I'm a dad and a husband. But I go to those meetings because they increase my performance as an entrepreneur across all four or five of my portfolio companies.
That's exactly what I do as well. And I want to take a look at the management of time.
Yeah.
Time is, we were talking earlier, you know, can't see her on the screen, but my wife to the right, we started talking about dimensions and aliens and how we're all in different time zones. I truly believe there's two types of time. One is the man-made construct, mm-hmm. which too many people don't know how to take advantage of. And then there's an infinity of time. One of my favorite questions to ask someone like you that has this persona of how do you get it all done?
Yeah.
Right? I got four kids. I have a wife. I'm teacher, you know, speaking, author, all the things, podcasts,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah, we're similar.
But it's all because of time. Yeah. How do you deal with that?
Well, there one approach, and the one I used to do was more like a Sheryl Sandberg lean in or like Arianne Huffington used to be. And I've interviewed Arianne a couple of times. In fact, she was on stage at the Bulletproof Conference this year. And she talks about how you just do it till you drop, right? And she dropped and like hit her head.
Oh,
and I had that happen to me a long time ago on an airplane. You know, it was just, I was dehydrated, right?
Yeah.
You know,
okay. It's like the Ruth Bader Ginsburg model.
Yeah, you're just going to put one foot in front of the other and just hold the accelerator to the floor and you'll get there, right? And that doesn't work and it leads to burnout and unhappiness. And in fact, this is a rule in Game Changers too. The odds of that giving you autoimmunity are astoundingly high. So if you're like burning the candle at both ends as an entrepreneur, and then you have a problem with your relationship at home, or you get a virus or whatever, the chances of it making your immune system start attacking different parts of your body, it's very high. And once that's turned on, it's very difficult to turn off. So if you're a high achiever, the odds of you having screwed up biology go up dramatically if you follow that model. So what I do now for time management is I look at that and say, can someone else do it? And if so, I really don't want to be in that meeting.
Nice. Right?
And I work with a couple assistants. So every minute of my workday is filled up and it's orchestrated. But in the morning, I wake up and my phone stays on airplane mode. I sleep with it's on airplane mode. And then I have breakfast with my kids and my wife. I drop my kids off at school and I'm home. And then I come back and I turn on my phone. So it's just because I could be available, you don't get to put what you want on my agenda. I drive the agenda. And email and even text messaging now have just become ways for people to put their agenda on top of mine. And I'm really religious about not allowing that. The downside, especially now that I've got multiple companies that I work with, is that certain people, it can be triggering because they're like, I don't have access when I want it.
Right.
Like, well, did you feel that you should have access when you wanted it? Because it doesn't really work like that. Because number one, I am the boss. And number two, it's not a personal thing if I say no. It's simply that things you don't know about that were higher priority for our joint mission, they trumped it. And so to have that level of trust and to build that into the culture, that is a challenge. But it's really important. Because if I had it up to me and I had infinite time and infinite cognitive function, I'd love to know what everyone in the company
right.
does. I just don't, and I recognize that, and they have a lot of freedom because of that.
And prioritization is really interesting. I think the last similarity that I see and want to ask you about is that we both at one time in our lives did not put our health first.
Yep.
Right? And for me, it was family, then work, and then health. But ironically, if you put family and work in front of your health, health will never come. There's no time to work out. There's no time to eat right.
No.
There's no time to, because you're always going to want to be with your family and your work.
Yeah.
And there's always something to do there. You made a major transformation and then were able to, what I always say, take your purpose and your passion and figure out how to be profitable with it.
Yep.
And also empower so many other people to be healthy. You've invented extraordinary products. You've changed the face of nutrition because people, it's counterintuitive what Bulletproof does.
Yeah.
You know, in the first time that I saw, I'm like, wait a second.
And butter?
How could the butter, right? Exactly. How could this actually be?
But it works.
It works, right. And so, you know, that transformation, how can people understand that, you know, this idea, because it's counterintuitive, that to take off the prioritization of the money side because like going to masterminds and spending time with your family and turning your phone off, and most importantly, everything that has to be your health, because you can't give what you don't have. And if you're not here, who cares? Mm-hmm. So where did all of that come about for you?
I used to weigh 300 pounds. I had arthritis in my knees when I was 14. And before I was 30, I was diagnosed as being high risk of stroke and heart attack and pre-diabetic and all that kind of stuff. So you could say not very healthy, but it wasn't for lack of trying. I was actually limiting my calories. I worked out an hour and a half a day, 6 days a week. For 18 months straight on a low-fat, low-calorie, semi-vegetarian kind of diet. Still weigh 300 pounds. So given all of that, I said, all right, what's going on here? I've prioritized it, but I've got stuff that doesn't work. So then I said, all right, let's try the stuff that's not supposed to work. I'll go to Tibet and learn meditation from the masters, and I'll start doing personal development stuff that my computer scientist mind says should not work. But from a health perspective, what I learned and what I actually teach my employees, it's number one is health. And all of your willpower comes from your biology. And especially for early stage startups, this is getting a little bit metaphysical or something.
I love it.
But there's, you make a field. And any meditation teacher, any of the people I met in Tibet or Chinese energy masters that I've become friends with, they can sense this stuff. Heck, anyone who's trained can sense that stuff. And it's a feeling. It's all feeling. It's not thoughts. But when you're creating a company, you're putting your energy into the company until it has enough of its own energy. You're manifesting, you're creating. Well, if you don't have enough energy because you can't turn food and air into energy the way your body's supposed to, you will not manifest the way you can. So your company, especially when it's young, is a direct reflection of your biological state. That's why you put your health first. And when you do that, you have enough energy to have willpower to be happy. Your neurotransmitters work right. You're less likely to be depressed and anxious and make bad decisions and all that stuff. So the ROI on that is higher than anything you can do. And the second place that you focus is on family. And then work is a close third, right? And that doesn't mean, oh, I'm going to just always put family first, but it means you pick and choose.
I love that.
I mean, I was invited.
Can you repeat that for people? Because I think it's important what you mean by the work is a close third. In other words, you can't be unrealistic and just say, I'm going to my kid's baseball game every single time.
It doesn't work. You got to decide what's important. And for me, maybe the best example, I've spoken on Tony Robbins' main stage at Unleash the Power Within, and I got an invitation to speak again. And I said, I'm sorry, it's my daughter's 10th birthday. Like, she's having a party that day. I'm not going to do it. Like, there's a 15,000 people screaming fans in the audience, and I'm not going to be on Tony's stage. So Tony was really gracious about it, and they let me do it remotely.
Oh, very cool.
But I was willing to walk away from that because you don't get to do your daughter's 10th anniversary, your daughter's 10th birthday again. You just don't. Right. So that's a case where, all right, not replaceable. Now, if it had been a basketball practice or something, fine. Sorry, I'm going to go see Tony, right? It's that ability to do that and then not feel stress and guilt and whatever else and just all the inner voices.
The ego-based emotions.
Like, look, I'm doing this and I feel clean because I wrote down my priorities because I'm very clear on them. Like, my biology first, family second, and then work third.
That's incredible because I've learned so much from you every time I watch you, listen to you in person, even on the internet and podcast. But I've never heard someone with the co-creation model, with your biology affecting, especially at the inception state of a company, and that's genius. Because I'm very aware of the energy of my company, but I always tell people, our goal is for when someone will walk in this office, the first thing we want them to say is, oh, I like the energy in here.
Yeah, I like how it feels. Yeah, not how it looks.
Exactly.
I don't think good thoughts about it. I felt it.
Yeah.
And
then I know I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
Acceleration.
And the company will succeed when you do it. My book before Game Changers is called Headstrong, and it is literally the biology of willpower, and it's about how do you manage energy creation in the brain? Because if you can do that, you'll be able to put a lot of heart into your company, and that's what the fastest growing, most successful companies with the best cultures do. They have a lot of heart in them.
And actually, Bulletproof allows you to have a lot of heart and brain power. So I wish I had more time here. I am just honored that you came on the Playbook. This is Dave Meltzer with Dave Asprey here with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.